So Sevgi is a person that's been thinking about program science for a number of years and has been convening groups of people to think about program science. And mainly Dr. Blanchard's been doing work with her in this area for at least 10 years. And it's a very interesting concept. I would say my talk is to discuss sort of where the United States is and where we're going with the program's science framework. And basically try to discuss a little bit about the what, the why, and the how. And I'm really bringing it from a domestic perspective. So first of all, we have a little bit of a problem because there's lots of different sciences out there. And a lot of people think, well, isn't program science the same as implementation or delivery science or system science or just good program management or high-impact HIV prevention? And now I've just found out about something that's new at CDC called the Science Impact Framework or Science as Program that our agency director is working on to help us improve the quality of science that we do at CDC so that it's actually of value to programs. And then for a long time, there's a lot of, especially the healthcare system, has been using a continuous quality improvement model that has a lot of similarities. So there's a lot of similarities in all of these different domains and sciences. I think at some point we're going to have to get our definitions all clear. But I'm hoping that by the end of my talk, you will understand why I believe program science is the right terminology to use, because the first word is program. I'm going to give you a quick just definitional words of program science. It's the systematic application of theoretical and empirical scientific knowledge to improve the design, implementation, evaluation, and impact of public health programs. Program science provides a framework and approach that expands the scope for knowledge development and provides an interface between program and science focused on resolving program issues. It incorporates program questions, program data into research questions. It works with the totality of the program, for those of you who work in program know what that means, rather than through single interventions, and it's really designed to maximize translation, adaption, and dissemination. We've actually framed our whole program grant around a program science model. We recognize we are just at the pre-contemplative phase in the United States. I think the challenge that people have had is that there's been a lot of jargon, and everyone's like, well, what am I supposed to do with all those words and everything I'm supposed to be doing? So I've been trying to create a visual because program science is not linear. There are multiple things happening simultaneously. We don't understand everything that's happening simultaneously. The term that is used by the continuous quality improvement is you are sailing the ship while you're building it. So I've tried to depict this lever pulley system, and there's five sort of spheres of influence that we need to be paying attention to at all times. I will say that I modified this from Dr. Chappell's science impact framework, but he has different things that he's focusing on in his little pulleys and levers that doesn't fit with the program model. So first of all, context is really important, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. Context is not something you can randomize in randomized control trials. So a lot of those studies find a result that then is very difficult to implement in the program setting if you haven't been working with the program to begin with to understand context. Clearly, we need knowledge. We in program have something called public health practice, which I'll define. We also pay attention to public health management, and we pay attention to public health measurement. So if we can do this right, we can pull the wheels and the levers and not have everything fall apart or stop or get stuck or clogged in the pipes. And we can take our morbidity and mortality and move it up to health and well-being. So again, in simple terms, context is the background against which we do what we do. The knowledge is what we produce and use. Public health practice is what we do to achieve our goals. Public health management is how we do what we do to achieve our goals. And public health measurement is how we evaluate what we do, and we constantly tweak it when we find out it's not working very well. We also ask the important questions, what is working and why, and what is not working and why not. And program science is also a journey. It's the analogy I hate to use is that when my son was in school, he really didn't like school, and he was doing math, and he'd always get the right answer. But he was coming home with C's and D's because he didn't show his work. And he was very upset because he says, I got the right answer, Mom. I should have gotten an A. I said, well, maybe in seventh grade you can get the right answer without showing your work. But eventually when you get to calculus, you have to know how to show your work. So program science is showing your work as you go along. We're not waiting for the publication. We're learning things, and we have milestones that we reach before the article is finally published. So again, a few more details. So I got the colors matching up here. So context has really three components that we need to be thinking about, at least in the field of STIs. We got organisms, and we know from gonorrhea, they're really smart, so we've got to be thinking about what their pathogenesis, their natural history, and now we've got the human microbiome that's sort of entering into the picture of things that we need to consider. We've got populations, and we've talked a lot about that in terms of sexual and social networks and risk behaviors we need to be thinking about. And then we've got our general environment. I just listed a few things: social determinants of health, healthcare systems, public health systems, social media. Those are all things that are currently changing for us in the United States. And all of these things are contributing to transmission dynamics. So I really look at the context in the thinking of transmission dynamics. And what are the contextual assumptions we're making when we're working on a daily basis that could be interfering with the overall goals we're trying to reach. Evidence-based is pretty easy, but I do want to remind people it's not just science that has knowledge. Programs have knowledge, and our communities have knowledge. And I use the word plural, communities, because we don't live in sort of a monolithic society anymore. We've got a lot of subpopulations that we really need to understand. Now, program health practice is a little more complicated. We have a number of dimensions that we work in. And really, public health practice is the program design and implementation part of these spheres of influence. And we have chosen at CDC to go back to the core roots of public health, which is assessment and assurance and policy. But to be able to do that, you've got to figure out which intervention strategies or activities are you going to be implementing in your area or for your populations, in your context and with your knowledge. Certainly a huge factor for those of us who work in government is workforce capacity. Sometimes we're very challenged by the people that are available to us that we can hire. And if you don't have good workforce that can implement what you're trying to do, you shouldn't do the intervention. It's like having a pill that's not, it's been contaminated, it's half the dose that was originally studied. And then you really need to start with program definition. That's the key to everything. If you haven't defined your program, you can't design your evaluation, you can't do your other factors. Now, the performance part of public health programs, public health management, is really your organizational excellence. So this is where you're trying to make sure you're efficient, you're effective, you're designing sustainable programs, and this also includes your workforce as well as your interventions. It's where you've got to have strategic decision-making going along the way because things are changing, and you've got to be strategic, and you've got to prioritize because there's not enough money to do everything that you would like to do. And then I put continuous quality improvement, and I know this has different definitions, into organizational excellence and program performance, where the concept that people are using now is this plan, do, study, act. Some people will say we need to change it to plan, do, study, assess. And it's a constant. We plan, we do, we look, we assess. Oops, it's not going very well. We go back, we tinker, we do it again. We also need to be doing similar things with our workforce development. We're developing our staff to be fit for purpose for the job that needs to be done today. And we need to be learning between publications. And then lastly, program evaluation is our public health measurement. There's a lot of different terms: process, outcome, impact. And the way that I like to try to simplify these things is process measures are really what the programs do, not what we do at a national level. It's what the program does. These are basically outputs. You're going to be asking questions like, what activities drive success? You know, what should I be looking at in my cascade of chlamydia screening? Am I implementing them correctly? If I've got leakages in my cascades, and we can make lots of cascades beyond the HIV cascade, and what outside factors, what are the moderators that could actually hurt what I'm doing or actually help what I'm doing? Outcome is at a more distal level where you're really trying to look at levels of influence that determine the domains of your outcomes, and you're really trying to look at the levels of influence that equal success. So you're getting more into that question of what is going to be success for me? And that's always a good question to ask when you start building a program. So why program science? So this I found is an interesting cartoon, and is the question that I'm constantly being asked at CDC about, because we now have to make business case models and justify all of our programs. So the question is, are we making an impact? And that's being asked of every single cooperative agreement grant at CDC. It's not unique to STDs. I think we've done a very good job. I'll share with you some data of the case that we're making for why we need to maintain our efforts and maybe at some point have additional resources. What CDC just looked at, and this is going to be published soon in Nature.com, is something they're calling the scientific trail. And I know it's a little bit hard for you to see this on the slide, and I encourage you to look for this on the web when it's out. It's basically looking at all countries, and what you're seeing in the skyscrapers in the darker colors are the number of papers that were published in 2012. So guess who's the blue, big blue skyscraper? That's the United States. Interesting, the next country is China. Now, the lighter boxes are actually the number of papers that were cited in the top 1% of all articles. The United States doesn't have the highest rate of number citations in the top 1%, so you can look at this later. So this suggests we're not really getting the best science out there. We're publishing a lot, but it's not in some of the journals that might have the most impact. And this is something that CDC is now looking at, of how we can improve the type of work we do so that it has more impact. So the next point that I would like to discuss is, how can scientists or program managers use the program science framework in the United States? And I'm going to kind of give some examples, because I think there's been a lot of program science out there in the United States. We just haven't really formalized it. We haven't had it systematically applied across all programs. Everyone's been tinkering. So we want to be able to identify areas where implementation of evidence-based interventions are not yielding impact. When you feel like you're not doing well, it's not helpful to keep not doing well. It would be helpful to, we're going to try to create learning networks. We're trying to get some interest of scientists. Not all scientists want to work in program science. We know it's messy. So I just want to give an example of an area where I think CDC used a program science model that has been very successful. We recognize the concern about antimicrobial resistance for gonorrhea. We are actively involved in this report, helping setting the 7 threat criteria. When you're at the table determining what the criteria should be, sometimes that's a little helpful. And gonorrhea was listed in the top 3 urgent threats in the United States, and it's been very helpful for us to sort of make our case that we are on the edge of the cliff and we do not have any additional antibiotics to use besides cephalosporins. We took a bold move without a lot of evidence to recommend dual therapy for gonorrhea. It was theoretical based on how TB is treated. And since we changed in 2010 to ceftriaxone in either azithromycin or doxycycline, and we still had the option of cefixime at that point, we have been seeing declining MICs in this country to the point they were almost below where we were in 2009. We never saw that for penicillin or fluoroquinolones. Could be related to a clonal nature of the organism, but at least we've outsmarted the resistant strain that has been seen around the world, and other places are seeing that as well. So there's going to be, I know Dr. Cacaldi is going to be presenting the data on that at this conference. I encourage you, and there's a lot of gonorrhea sessions, so I encourage you to see them. We also started measuring in many areas, and it's now something that we want staff to be doing. We are looking at the proportion of gonorrhea-infected patients treated with a CDC-recommended antibiotic regimen. And what you can basically see here is that, you know, in 2009, only 77% of providers, and this is from a sample of gonorrhea cases from our Sun site, population-based, were correctly or using the recommended regimens. And over time, with more education, we were up to 84%. But as soon as you change your guidelines, the number goes down. Now, Dr. Holmes yesterday said it takes us 17 years to implement new recommendations. So we at least have some data. We're doing better. We can get things going within, a year or so. And in 2012, we were up to 80%. Our goal for 2017 is to get up to 90% of whatever the recommended treatment is going to be, and hopefully we will have one, for treating gonorrhea. The biggest problem, we've got a couple problems. So I'm going to give you a couple problems, and this is where I feel like we need a program science report, because we can't wait 10 years for some kind of randomized control trial to tell us what to do. I recognize now that I'm at CDC, we are at the end of the food chain for data. The locals are at the beginning of the food chain for data. We're at the beginning of the food chain for money, and the locals are at the end of the food chain when they get their money. So we're really encouraging, and in the APPS grant, we've actually required that all states learn how to match their data with HIV, geocode their data, start analyzing their data by risk factors, collecting risk factors not only for MSM, but HIV status for pregnant women, so we have a better understanding of these subpopulations. But what San Francisco's been seeing, and they've been working hard on syphilis elimination for over 15 years, if you look at the blue bar, they're actually seeing declines in HIV. But they're having epidemics among MSM with syphilis, with gonorrhea, and with chlamydia. So we're starting to see this diversion of the epidemiology of HIV and STDs, and Dr. Holmes talked a little bit about it, and the question is, why? There's a lot of theories. Is it serosorting? Is it the community isn't aware? Is it lack of access to health care? Is it because we're now doing more testing, so our rates are going up like we saw with women? We need to answer this question, and I think the program science model is a good way to do that. We have more concerning data about HIV and the importance of STDs. This is, again, from our data that we get to CDC in 29 states reporting MSM. What I'm concerned about is the 20 to 24-year-old black MSM. Already 50% are co-infected with HIV. If you compare it to Hispanic MSM, we're in a much smaller percentage, about 20%, as well as white MSM. So we've got different dynamics going on among our MSM communities and among men who have sex with men that don't disclose that they are having sex with men. We also know there's lots of rectal gonorrhea and chlamydia, and providers are not screening for that, especially among HIV-positive individuals. And we now are starting to see more and more studies being done showing that if you're HIV negative today and you come into an STD clinic with rectal gonorrhea or rectal chlamydia or primary and secondary syphilis, your chance of seroconverting in the next year ranges about 5%. It goes up significantly if you're younger. In the study in New York City, the annual incidence among those less than 20 for rectal or chlamydia gonorrhea was 10.5, and black race was 15. Clearly a population at risk, in need of consideration for behavioral and PrEP interventions. We also know people in STD clinics are likely to be diagnosed with new HIV infections, so it's another way to advance the AIDS agenda. So we are trying, now this is an audience I know that understands this, but sometimes we have to educate our colleagues. We really are trying to re-educate our HIV colleagues that HIV prevention actually helps, STD prevention actually helps HIV prevention. When you're getting those STD tests, you're not doing it for STD control. You're doing it for as part of your HIV prevention portfolio. We're also looking into the concerning trends of STD clinics closing. Karen Hoover, I think it's WP104, has some studies. We're monitoring the rates of STD clinic closures. We think there were about 21 local health department STD clinics closed in 2012. And we're also finally answering the question, why do people come to STD clinics? We had no data. So we've now done a sample of 5,000 patients. So it was somewhat of a program science model. We're finding that people who seek services are young, about 30%. which is a high proportion, were identified as LGBT patients. Half of the patients were uninsured. 1 in 3 came for expert care or confidentiality. 1 in 4 reported they came for cost. And interestingly, women were using the emergency department more for their primary care than men were. I thought it would be more of a male higher ratio. We've also got problems with our messaging now. I'm just going to summarize. HIV's got a lot of tools. It's really exciting to be in HIV prevention. They've got 4 check boxes. We're still left with 2, sort of like our syphilis test. We're about 1 test above the Wasserman test. And pregnancy even has a new box to check off, long-acting reversible contraception. So we're going to be challenged as we're trying to move forward with our prevention tools in competition both for HIV and with reproductive health. So we need a program science approach to that. So what are kind of the next steps? I want everyone thinking about it. I'd say if you're a program person, if you meet a scientist, tell them the 3 questions you'd love for them to answer. And if you're a scientist and you want to know what program people do, just go up and start talking to them. So we're going to implement program science as best we can through our APPS grant, which stands for Assessment Assurance Policy and Prevention Services. We're trying to seek resources and really want to work with academia so that they can support the training of embedded scientists, and people could have a discipline called program science of someone who doesn't want to become a professor but may want to, on graduation, come work in a health department in a somewhat leadership role. I think we at CDC want to help link scientists. I've had one person come up to me already from Australia who's interested in program science and wants to find out where can they get embedded into a good program and learn about program. We want to develop learning networks, and we need to develop program science metrics of success because we are sort of talking empirically about this approach, and we need to see how effective it is. But we know at least in some areas the approaches we've been using for decades, especially for syphilis and gay or other MSM, is not being successful at the moment. So thank you very much, and we are going to have Jamie speak next, and then we'll have a few moments for questions.